I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to another episode of the Wisconsin Forward podcast here on the Civic Media Network. In this episode, we're going to be talking about the controversial school voucher program. Wisconsin was actually the first state in the country to allow school vouchers. That's the use of public funds to subsidize families who send their kids to private schools. Governor Tommy Thompson in 1989 and the state legislature brought the vouchers into being. The program started as a way to give options to a few low-income black families in Milwaukee who wanted to send their kids to private, non-religious schools. State Representative Annette Polly Williams, a black legislator who served in the assembly for 30 years, championed the program initially, but she had a change of heart years later as the program morphed into something quite different than what she'd envisioned. The program ballooned, going statewide and allowing middle-class families to participate, as well as permitting the vouchers to be used for religious private schools. They've hijacked the program, Williams said in her later years. Here's how it's ballooned. In 1990 to 1991, only 7 schools participated in the program. Now there are nearly 400 schools participating, mostly religious, with about 55,000 pupils and their families receiving vouchers. And we, the Wisconsin taxpayers, are footing the bill for them, which comes to more than $500 million a year. That's money that's being drained from our public schools. So let's get into it. First, I'm going to bring Earl Ingram in. He's the host of the Earl Ingram Show on Civic Media, and he knew Annette Polly Williams very well, and he was there for the inception.
So let me begin by saying the school choice program was not called school choice in the beginning. It was called vouchers. There was this wonderful woman, State Representative Annette Polly Williams, and her aide, Larry Harwell, who seems like 30 years or so ago now, it seems like yesterday, created a voucher program. And it was based on the fact that people of color struggled sometimes in the Milwaukee public school system. Annette Polly Williams, who's a state representative, a beloved state representative in our community, came up with this idea. She was watching many others around us, children who went to parochial schools, parents who could afford to send their kids to parochial schools and get quality educations, and she wanted that for her own children, her own grandchildren, and that's kind of what was the impetus of creating vouchers. Could have never happened if they didn't have the right governor at the time, a Republican governor. Annette Polly Williams was a Democrat. And if you can envision, you see things today where Democrats and Republicans can't work together. Annette Polly Williams was able to work along with then Governor Tommy Thompson, who made all of that possible.
Do you think Tommy was really interested in the well-being of poor black students in Milwaukee, or was this kind of a ploy for Tommy, carrying water for the privatizers, or was he sincere, do you think?
Tommy Thompson was sincere. I remember Tommy Thompson well. Tommy Thompson had a great relationship with the black community. I would venture to say that Tommy Thompson probably had one of the best relationships with the black community of Milwaukee than Democratic governors. And so he was sincere when he decided to move forward with the then voucher program.
Eventually, Polly Williams said, this has gone wrong. The school voucher program is not what I had intended it to be. And she kind of recanted or renounced the program as it developed. How did that happen?
Well, it was hijacked and railroaded by George Bush Sr. And so they realized that this was an opportunity for them to show some leadership in education. And so they took over what was the voucher program and named it the school choice program. And it became a plank of the election of then President George Bush the First. They brought Polly Williams, a state representative, Annette Polly Williams, I never will forget, to Washington, D.C. for a photo op. And she was basically pushed to the side, and they took this program and altered it to the degree that it was the whole purpose of what it was created for was lost. And then, to add insult to injury, people who are already paying for their kids to go to private schools now are able to get dollars from the taxpayers. And now instead of supporting one school district, the taxpayers that were now supporting this whole new school district, especially for people who are already sending their kids to private schools. So it certainly changed the whole dynamic of it.
And so the school choice program really became a huge force here in Wisconsin. So income levels were lifted for families that could afford to send their kids to private schools. Tax dollars, our own citizen tax dollars, are being siphoned off from the public schools to finance these private schools. And that had what kind of effect on the public schools?
Well, it had a devastating effect. So I'm a lifelong resident of the city of Milwaukee. I graduated high school in 1972. Milwaukee Public Schools had 120,000 students when I graduated. Today, Milwaukee Public Schools has probably 65,000. There are 50,000 students in schools other than private public schools in Milwaukee. It's had a devastating effect on Milwaukee Public Schools, not only because they've cut down the amount of students that are in the schools, which affects the amount of money that comes into the schools, but what they did more than anything else was paired off some of the quality students who could possibly help to balance off what used to be, unfortunately, many students that are failing in the district. And I'd also say that what made this so sinister and so hurtful is that public schools are mandated by law to educate everybody. They can't turn anybody away. These schools have the freedom to say no. And so even though at the beginning of the school year, when those students go over to the voucher schools, they receive the money, but then later on, they can say, well, hey, Earl's not going to make it. Release that student. And by law, Milwaukee Public Schools has to take that student back without the funds that they originally received to pay for that student. The voucher schools got the resources, got rid of what they considered the headache, and Milwaukee Public Schools gets the student back. And by law, they have to educate them. I think if you look at what has transpired now, they've become for-profit schools. We can't leave that out. There's a major growth in the city of Milwaukee of these schools. But not only that, when they started expanding these vouchers, they went to different towns and cities in the state. And now it's not just in the city of Milwaukee where it began. It spread all over the state of Wisconsin. In many areas, Green Bay, South Milwaukee, they're experiencing the same thing. They did not want those schools in their areas because they're in direct competition with public schools. And when you destroy public education, which has been the bedrock of what our nation really was and what created it, I don't think people really realize the major damage that's being done and has been done.
Now to discuss how the voucher program has adversely affected our public schools, here's Heather Dubois-Bernan, the executive director of the Wisconsin Public Education Network. What is the Wisconsin Public Education Network?
We are a statewide advocacy coalition that tries to connect everybody who cares about Wisconsin kids and their public schools to information, action, and each other. That means students, teachers, parents, community members, administrators, board members, educators, everybody who has a stake, which is basically everybody.
And it's an incredible grassroots organization. You really bring pressure on our elected officials like almost no other group that I know of. So congratulations on that.
Thanks for that. We need more people to join us.
So tell me about the voucher program in Wisconsin. Give us vouchers 101 here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, school privatization is really confusing here in Wisconsin because there are so many different types. Some people might be interested to learn that Wisconsin actually had the first state-funded school voucher program, the one that started in Milwaukee. And the act was in 1989. It went into being in 1990. That program was expanded over the next couple of decades. And then under Governor Walker was expanded statewide, first in Racine in 2011, and then statewide in 2013. And now we have a program today that operates all over the state. And basically what it is a state-funded voucher, kind of like a coupon that goes to cover the tuition of a specific student at a specific private school. So these are private schools. Almost all of them are religious schools, and they operate under a different set of rules than public schools, but now using public funds.
Now, that different set of rules is what?
Well, public schools are required to operate under certain rules and obligations that are set by the state and federal governments, and private organizations are exempt from them. They don't have to, for example, follow laws that public schools have to follow, that you can't discriminate against students, for instance, or that you have to provide special education services, or follow laws like the Americans for Disabilities Act. Public schools are also required to have democratically elected school boards so that we have a way of having a voice and an influence in policy measures at the district level. Private schools participating in the voucher program don't have to follow those rules.
And so they can take any kid that they want, and they can refuse any kid that they want.
Well, technically, they can't refuse any kid that they want. But what we do see is that they have the leeway to do what's called counseling out. That's when a student who has been admitted to the program is rejected, and private schools can reject students once they're admitted for any reason whatsoever. In fact, they don't have to give a reason.
And some of these private schools, voucher schools, have been kind of fly by night. That is, they'd open in the fall and then they'd close by December, or they'd close in January.
Yeah, there are a lot of examples in Wisconsin of students and family who have really been left in the lurch when their schools shut down either a grade or a whole school, or and lots of documented incidents of the sort of fraud that is much more difficult to pull off in a public system where there's a very intense level of scrutiny on how public dollars are spent.
And give us some idea of the magnitude of the program now. How many students are in the private school choice or voucher program compared to how many are in public education?
Well, we've got about 128,000 students statewide who are in private schools. Of those, about 60% attend a voucher school. So there are just under 55,000 students in the voucher program this year, attending 383 total schools, which is a huge jump from where we were just 4 or 5 years ago. And part of the reason for that is because in the state statute, the enrollment allotment increases every single year. And so it's not that demand is greater, it's that more students who are already attending private schools now receive a voucher. In fact, about 80% of the kids who are in that statewide program never attended a public school at all. We should expect even bigger increases in those enrollment numbers in the coming years, because statute allows that in the year 2026, the enrollment caps come off that program altogether.
Which is ironic, because the program was started for poor families in the Milwaukee area.
Yeah, that's another way that the program has really changed over time. In the Milwaukee and Racine programs, families can qualify to receive a voucher if they have incomes at 300% of federal poverty. In the statewide program, it's 220%. 220%. That means you can make, $60,000 to $80,000 a year and still qualify for a voucher.
And you said the vast majority of families that are taking advantage of this voucher program were sending their kids prior to that to private schools anyway, so they could afford it even without the voucher.
Well, we don't know what the story is on those parents. Maybe they were getting a scholarship through their church or through the school. I mean, clearly they have qualified at that level of financial need. But yes, we know that there is no groundswell movement in Wisconsin of people who are clamoring for more choice options and more voucher schools. The only people that I see clamoring for this are the paid lobbyists for the privateers who have a very loud and disproportionate voice at the state house, and who are putting tons and tons of money into campaigns that try to create this myth that people are dissatisfied with their public schools, which we know overall they are not.
Tell me, on state funding, how much state funding now goes to these voucher schools?
Well, it was over $500 million this last year. And when we factor in the so-called independent charters, those are charter schools that operate outside of district control and are privately operated but publicly funded, the price tag is over $700 million this year alone.
And what's the consequence of that for our public schools?
Well, the pot just keeps getting smaller and smaller. And we're seeing that as a percentage of state GPR, even when we factor in these extra payments, the state is just giving a smaller and smaller amount to our public schools. We had a tiny bump this year in the past state budget, giving $325 per student to our students in public schools. But the voucher increase went up over $3,000. Students who are getting a voucher to attend at the high school level got a $3,342 increase. And so there's a real disconnect in the way that the state is choosing to invest in one sector over the other. And that's just increasing the funding gap across the state, which is already complicated by a lot of factors. Related to the way we fund public schools is already unfair.
And the way we fund public schools in Wisconsin, some of it comes from state government, a lot of it. And then there was a freeze on that for a long time, which is why a lot of localities had to go to referendum to increase the tax base for schools in their district. Is that correct?
That is correct. In fact, the Evers budget, his first one, was the, kept those caps in place. And it was only the second budget under the Evers administration that we were able to see that tiny increase. The big irony here is, well, that sounds like great news. And in one sense, it is. Districts are desperate for that additional spending authority. It doesn't even come close to keeping pace with inflation. We got $325 per student. It would have taken $3,380 just to keep pace with inflation for all those years when that cap was frozen and we didn't see an inflationary increase to state aid.
And that was all the Walker years in the first part of Evers.
Yeah, that's just measuring since 2009. And so that doesn't even take into account what we could call the old broken, which is how bad things got since those revenue limits were put into place, which was in 1995.
And what's the answer for that? It's just to lift those revenue limits and not let them come back?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. The answer is to reform our entire school funding system so that it's aligned with student needs and not property values. I mean, this idea that the state should dictate how much each child needs in a certain district without even looking at the needs of those kids, without seeing how many kids are English language learners, how many kids have disabilities, how many kids need to get bused in from long distances. These are all huge factors that contribute to schools' costs, and the current formula doesn't accurately or honestly assess for those needs at all.
And tell me about rural schools. There are not a lot of voucher schools in a lot of rural areas, and the rural public schools now have been strangled by funding. So what has the school choice program or the voucher program done to public education in rural areas?
Yeah, it's just further widened that gap too. I mean, over 56% of our districts are rural, but 20% of the kids go to those schools. Vouchers really have a disproportionate impact on rural schools because the pot is already shrunk for those districts, especially ones that are already blighted by these low spending limits that they set in the 1990s. And so as that gap gets wider and wider and more schools statewide are participating in the program, we see that even in districts where you don't have any voucher schools, students are really paying the price of the overwhelming expansion of this program at the expense of students who attend public schools.
And there's nothing in the Wisconsin State Constitution that talks about or that would allow public funding of private or parochial schools, correct?
On the contrary, what the Constitution says is that public schools are required to provide as uniform an education as practicable to all kids, and no sectarian instruction shall be allowed therein.
Wow, I would think that would be a prohibition, but it got through once.
Got through once. So, I mean, that matter has already been settled by the court on the argument that the voucher follows the child and doesn't go to the school, which is also a bit of a shell game because parents don't get a check and go cash it in or a coupon and go cash it in. The money does actually go directly from the state to the school, but it passes through the public school district in a way that kind of confuses the matter.
That's Heather Dubois-Bernon, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Public Education Network. To amplify Heather's concerns, let's hear from the hosts of the Busted Pencils podcast on Civic Media. That's Tim Slecker and Johnny Lupinacci. First, Tim Slecker.
That's a crucial point to point out, is for people to realize, too, that the messaging has drastically changed about moving kids out of failing schools into better schools, because the evidence that never happened. Every experiment in Milwaukee of looking at kids that were moved from the public schools into some form of private voucher choice, the academic achievement never blossomed. It just didn't happen because it wasn't that the teachers and the kids were in failing schools. They were in a failing system of socioeconomic supports that did not respond to the community the way that it was needed. This was never about failing public schools. The messaging, though, has shifted, and you can see this now where it's a family's choice.
Yeah, and it's just manipulative of the general public because it sounds really great. Hey, let's provide better educational opportunities for kids. And across the board, I think by and large, people are like, this is great. Something we really need. Schools need some help. We need some improvement. So this sort of illusion of choice and improvement was just a real big political marketing campaign to privatize education. And like, private schools have always existed, and they'll always exist in a form of like, where if you can afford them or they can offer a scholarship, it's a different kind of education than a public education system. But this was a blatant sort of marketing tactic and political move to create an economy in education, to really deregulate education at state levels, because education is a state, right? And Wisconsin's more than a canary in the coal mine, right? This is like something that started here, and people have been working hard to sort of dispel the myth that this choice is actually improving schools for kids. It's not. It's just improving economic opportunity for big companies that want their hands in the pot of public education money. And so it's robbed children, it's robbed families, it's bad advertising because right. it's not been delivered on, but it's made a lot of high-powered people money.
I mean, it was definitely a money grab.
Yeah.
But it's also an ideological grab. Mm. It's part of this theme to say to the people of Wisconsin, the people of this country, that anything private is good. Anything public is bad.
That's right.
And the private sector can do it better than the public sector. Right. And the whole notion that there is a public, or that there is a community, or that we have shared interests as fellow citizens in a democracy goes the wayside when they push this ideology down our throats.
Yeah.
And, you know, the result of that is, you know, you get rid of public parks. You don't like public. You don't want a public park. You don't want...
And you blame the public sector for the public parks being gone.
Yeah. And the idea that you just get rid of everything public is just kind of insane. And it's insane at the education level. But it is run and pushed, this ideology, by some super rich people. Billionaire, Betsy DeVos.
You know what?
Trump's Secretary of Education, her group, American Federation for Children, has spent $9 million on electing Republicans in Wisconsin since 2010, who will keep opening the spigot of money now. And how much money has the school choice program gotten for that money? Billions and billions of dollars.
Matt, you also then made the point here of going, why is this happening? Because it is an attack on democracy.
Right.
It's an attack on democracy. When you attack public, you're attacking democracy, because those are those spaces that are preserved and waiting for us to allow us to come together and occupy to practice democracy. If we limit those spaces, we're limiting democracy.
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head with it also being an ideological thing, because it's you know, stepping back, it really is about saying, should there even be industry in education? Is the public sector capable, or should it, in a democracy, should we have that? And I think a lot of us have said, absolutely. Like, to make this an industry should almost be an oxymoron, right? We shouldn't have like a corporate model of education. But that's that big ideological view that's been pushed, and it goes back decades and decades. And it's no accident that it's an attack on schools, because public schools are where we learn the importance of democracy, is mm-hmm. where we realize that even with industry out there, there are some really important things that are part of the common good, that are the fabric of a healthy, strong democracy. And so, I mean, it's, sadly for schools, they've been the target, and that has been sort of the sad state of the war on public education all across this country.
And it gets to the curriculum battles too, because yeah. I mean, you know, you go in some private parochial schools, they'll be that are funded with Wisconsin taxpayer public dollars, mm-hmm. they're teaching, you know, creationism or things that are just so anti-science that it's kind of mind-boggling. This has been such a hard nut to crack for people, because the sell job was so great in Wisconsin, sure. starting with an African-American civil rights activist assembly person, Polly Williams. Mm. But they don't listen to what Polly said at the end, when she totally renounced the contamination of the so-called choice program, when she saw that it was just a tool and she was just being used as a tool for decades on this thing. And Heather, you mentioned earlier that there's confusion on, you know, are we spending record historic amounts, or are we underfunding? So do you want to clear that up?
We are currently spending more than $500 million a year on vouchers alone. That does not include the other forms of privatization that we are funding with public tax dollars in the state. That is, schools that are publicly funded but privately operated, like the so-called independent charter schools. This fall, kids will be entering the 16th year in a row that the state did not provide a public school funding budget that kept pace with inflation from the previous year. That's 16 years of cuts. Mm-hmm. It's time to say enough is enough. We're not here over saying, you know, what are you fighting for? Adequate aid. What are you funding for? Just doing what we've been doing. No, we want to set a higher bar. We want to restore the joy gap for every kid, so that all of our kids, all of our educators, feel like they are welcome in a thriving, joyful, vibrant public school. It's, you know, it's not enough to say we just have to give them exactly enough, or exactly as much as they're used to, or exactly what they'll take. We need to set a higher bar for our kids, and people who are ready to do that need to get off the sidelines. Support these referenda. Be an everyday ambassador for your kids in your schools. Let your neighbors know what you love about them. Join us at Wisconsin Public Education Network. Come to our summer summit, July 30 and 31 in Madison, and learn more about how you can be part of this growing movement, and do your part in standing up for local kids and setting that higher bar that they deserve, because it's on us. No one else is going to do this work for us.
An investment in strong public education is an investment in your state's economy. It's an investment, a high yield, sort of like safe investment on better local economics and, you know, lower crime and all the things that we want in our states, better health care. It all starts with a strong public education system. So it's just also a wise investment. Best bang for the buck, invest in your public schools.
Yeah, it's an investment in the economy. It's an investment in community. It's an investment in democracy.
Yeah,
it's an investment in joy.
I love it.
I loved Heather's line about joy. Fill that joy gap. Fund our public schools. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Wisconsin Forward podcast. I'm your host, Matt Rothschild, and I'll be back with another episode soon on the upcoming crucial Wisconsin Supreme Court race. So please watch for that one.